Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to issue 5, the end of our first story arc, Comic Shock Confidential. My name is Andrew Farmer. I am, as always, your host for Hey Kids Comics, which is the show that you are listening to. With me, as always, is my co-host and producer, Jedi Cole Houston.
Good evening, comic fans.
There he is.
Almost tonight, like a sportscaster. Good evening, comic fans.
It's Whoopi Cushion Night at the ballpark. So
really,
yeah,
it's Spider-Man. Yeah, the first 500 people sit on Spidey's face.
You know, we might talk about that today.
that's true.
Today, we're going to be talking about social issues in comics. It's sort of our, if this was a Jeopardy category, it would be the potpourri category for what we're doing in this first. The rapist. The first story arc that we've done, which the issues so far in fairly sequential order are, I'm going to get one of them wrong. I know I'm going to get one of them wrong.
It's that's what I'm here for.
Sexuality in comics, women in comics, religion in comics. And we started it all off with why I hate fanboys, and now we're ending it with social issues in comics. So I think I got those almost in the right order with a little pulp fictioning on the first one that I decided that's I was right. going to hold off till the last one.
But it actually added some flavor to the entire thing. You feel like you've been somewhere now.
Exactly. You've gone somewhere and back again, Frodo. Bilbo. Well, may I talk about that too?
We may as well.
The things we're going to be talking about tonight are, and again, this is something that we had to plan for a while, so it is timely, but not due to our planning. It just seems to be what's happening.
It just everything's hitting full cylinders. It's like the there's inevitably there's a sort of random fate that manifests.
It does. It's some kind of strange, unfortunate serendipity sometimes that we end up talking about the things that we do when we talk about them. But violence in comics and guns, gun control, those issues will be the first thing we talk about. The second thing we talk about is going to be not sex, because we've done sex, but sexually transmitted diseases and the results of promiscuity in comics.
Yeah, I think we've touched upon sexuality itself and how sexuality manifests itself as part of the human condition.
Correct.
And now we're sort of going to touch on the aftermath.
The actual manifestations.
That's right. The physical manifestation of certain sexual acts.
That's correct. And lastly, we are going to talk about drug use, tying it back to my favorite story arc of all time in comic books, the rise of Arsenal.
Indeed.
Because we're going to talk about all this fun stuff. All right. So the first thing we're going to talk about is violence in comics and gun violence, violence in general. Cole, why don't you kick us off with this one?
Well, I think, one of the things when you say violence in comics, the first thing that might pop into your head is, comics by and large, especially superhero comics, are violent by their very nature. The fist, uppercut to the jaw kind of justice that you see. And that's
sure.
not really what we're talking about.
No.
Because that's part and parcel. What we want to look at here is how does the issue of violence, especially gun violence and other social aspects of violence as it crops up in society, how are those addressed and in what ways do they affect comic book universes, at least within our frame of reference? Of course, you're going to listen to this and say, well, you didn't mention this or this. We can't read every comic ever written. We'd love
to.
Well,
and we've said it before in the other issues, and we'll say it again. There are things that we're not going to get to in certain issues that we will revisit. And if you want to hear us talk about something, feel free to listen to the end of the show, and we tell you where to reach out and touch us.
And also, this is a good point to bring up. Be sure to check out the Jedi Cole Universe forums. Go into the Hey Kids Comic Forum and start a forum about any given issue of this show and, get the conversation going amongst the other fans out there.
That's right. Good point. But yeah, we're talking more about hyper violence and realistic violence and its effects and its outcomes in popular culture and the way that we see it and the way we read it as comic book readers and the effects it has on us. So what was the first?
Prominent, I think, would be the one shot from DC, Batman Seduction of the Gun.
This was in our research and I should be honest and candid. And for transparency's sake, my research in this consisted of a Google search about a half hour ago when Cole mentioned this to me, and I had never, ever heard of it.
Yeah, and of course, my research was I was aware of the comic. I was vaguely aware of what it was about. But apart from having to pack hundreds of these during my days at Diamond, I was not exactly tremendously knowledgeable about what played out in the book. I never actually read a copy myself to be completely open.
So the book was released as a result of a shooting of somebody who worked with DC Comics from Warner Brothers. Somebody that worked for Warner Brothers that worked in close conjunction with DC Comics. Essentially, the guy went out to make a phone call at a payphone and was gunned down. And this was DC's response to that. What was it about, Cole?
Again, my memories of – I remember reading about it as well back then. So
yeah, because it actually hit the cycle.
My knowledge of it is very limited. But as I recall, it had something – it was basically following the path of a gun through Gotham City.
Okay.
And it's about gun running, gang violence, and especially what do firearms, especially handguns, what does that do to you? I think was part of, you know,
like as a person.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, you know, when you have the ability, one of the things that I always think of, because one of those brilliant things anyone ever said about handguns was said by Penn and Teller, or specifically by Penn Jillette, since Teller doesn't really talk. They had done revive the bullet catch, their own twist on the old, largely considered the single most dangerous conjuring trick out there was the bullet catch. And in setting that up, one of the most profound things anyone has ever said about handguns was said by Penn Jillette on stage, is that you should never point a gun at anything unless you intend to destroy it. And I think that certainly comes into play here, whether it was, you know, explicit in the comic itself or not, is that once you have that kind of power that gun represents, and I think that's where in the seduction of the gun, in addition to being sort of a kind of screw you nod to the Seduction of the Innocent book from decades past, there is a lure there because it's a kind of sense of power that is an unfortunate product of the accessibility, the prevalence, the ubiquitous nature of handguns. And this was sort of, you know, a Batman story that took a very real world turn. The villains weren't, you know, your hideous deformed rogues gallery. They were the pressures and the various aspects of society in a society where firearms are rather prevalent.
Oh, yeah.
And regardless of your views on guns, this wasn't about, you know, by God, we should have guns, shouldn't have guns. It was about the psychology of a gun society.
Yes. And in a lot of ways, again, present timing being what it is, Batman is a character that part of the mythos of the Batman character is a gun society.
Exactly.
And what it means to fight against the – I'm gonna refer to it as the easy lure of using a firearm in order to exact your will on whether it be, you know, a thug or the Joker or something like that. You know, that's something that Batman's never done. No guns ever.
Except in his early days, oddly enough, where he was you see some of the early Bob Kane images, he's packing heat.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And there was a neat thing that they did in Teen Titans, I think, just to touch on Batman and guns real quick, where there was like an alternate universe or a future Batman who not only was packing heat, but he had actually purchased the original Joe Chill gun to carry. And if I'm not mistaken,
really?
The gun that Batman carried early on may have been Joe Chill's, but don't quote me on that.
Well, and there was one – if we're going to talk about guns and what they mean to the reader and the impact that they should have in comic books, one issue comes to mind for me, and that is there's an issue of Captain America – in said issue, it was during the Starry Arc. Do you remember the Hate Monger?
I remember the character, yeah.
Okay.
I've seen the Hate Monger periodically and crop up.
You know, up to that point, Hate Monger is a hate monger, for lack of a better term.
Very, you know, apropos name there.
Yeah, they did a good job with that one. He was, you know, he was essentially like a neo-Nazi type, white power, white supremacist guy. And up to this point, the story arc had been very Captain America and very kind of Captain America All-American Goofy. You know, the hate mongers, it was somewhere where there was a lot of snow and an alpine type things. And the hate mongers' minions were skiing around. It was like a James Bond type thing, you know. But the issue ends with him taking over a plane. The hate monger taking over a plane. The only way that Captain America, that Steve Rogers, could stop the hate monger was to shoot him.
Wow.
And for me, and that will always stick with me, more so than anything else, more so than any Punisher book, any other gun-laden, cable, giant gun strapped to everything, shoot-em-up comic book, the image of Captain America having – and he didn't – you know, it was obvious there was – you know, he didn't want to shoot him. He wasn't – if there was any other way to get this – to get, you know, the plane not to crash into a mountain, he would have done it. But there was no other way. And that image has stuck with me since I read that book. And it's like, you know, he's got an Uzi because it's like the early 90s because that's the only gun you could have.
Everybody was either a ninja or carried an Uzi.
or both Snake Eyes.
Especially Uzi Ninja was one of my favorite characters back then.
They renamed him Snake Eyes later.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
Uzi Ninja.
A lot of people don't realize early on it was Uzi Ninja.
It was Uzi Ninja. It's confusing. It was.
Well, it was also, you know, if you didn't see it spelled out, it sounded a little disgusting.
It really did. It was like, is he undead? Is it a hand ninja that didn't come back all the way?
Does he need some unguent? What's?
But that one, for me, that was my seduction of the gun. That was my seeing one of my heroes of comic books who had never used a gun, even though he had used a gun. I had never seen him in a comic book use a gun.
Well, especially
obviously,
on his case.
Yeah. And obviously, during the war, Captain America had used guns. But, you know, I had never seen him do anything besides behead a vampire with a shield up to that point that would be considered terminal.
But the nice thing about the undead
violence
in comics is they're like robots.
They're
okay
fine
to slaughter them wholesale.
Exactly.
But what makes compelling storytelling is when a character who isn't the Punisher takes a life.
Exactly. Exactly. That one for me and the seduction of the gun for you, that really – they really put into perspective the – if you're a hero, like – because that was the thing about Captain America is he was a hero. He was like the – he is still, but was like the Marvel Batman and would not take a life if he could at all help it. Spider-Man, that kind of character. And to see him have to struggle and then do it and then deal with the ramifications of those actions – was more powerful for me. You know, I've never been a gun person myself, and I probably never will be. And things like that are the things that informed that side of me.
Absolutely. And it's also sort of the former soldier as law enforcer.
Correct.
And it also makes a compelling story because it is like law enforcement. You know, for the most part, police aren't running around gunning people down. But there are situations where deadly force is necessary, where there are no other options available.
You're backed into that corner. And
exactly. And that it's nice to see that at least occurred. I wasn't aware of this particular story before, but that's nice to hear that sort of issue was touched upon and how that happens and how it's dealt with. And certainly, you know, you get your guns ablazing type of characters like, Punisher and then Vigilante, which was DC's sort of Kmart of Punishers.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, really, Adrian? A black and blue tracksuit with a bright orange or bright yellow belt. And the incredibly cool, I have to give you this, when it comes to style, the yellow nunchucks, that's some pretty cool stuff.
If you can pull off a yellow nunchuck.
That's right.
Actually, it was Ultimatum was the group name.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, the story's the same, and it was, you know, he ended up having to shoot. Yeah, it was tough. It was. I remember reading it, and it actually bothered me after I read it. Yeah, it actually stuck with me.
And applause to Marvel for publishing, because so long Captain America was sort of the untouchable character. I remember reading this little treatise that they published in Marvel Age, which was their little, you know, self-styled self-promotion and letting you know when the comics were coming out rag. And they published some stuff about, you know, breaking into comics as a writer, and they cited this example of this script that somebody had sent them, and Captain America uses the word damn, and, you know, in the editor's notes, he would never use the word damn. And I'm sure nowadays he probably says it all the time, but, you know, back then they were just so fiercely protected of Captain America being just Mr. White Bread and All-American. They were sort of like, Shazam with a shield. And it makes a more compelling character and a more believable character that you let him live some real world every now and again. And maybe even admit that perhaps the 40s weren't as wholesome as we'd like to imagine.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to explain. The thing about Captain America, and I don't want this to be Captain America cast, unfortunately. People, it's very easy, and when the movie came out, a lot of people were very up in arms about the fact that Captain America was using, a Thompson, a Tommy gun, during the movie.
Well, I think it's largely because the Thompson submachine gun is probably one of the least accurate firearms ever made.
It's true.
It's a spray and pray. I mean, I'm sorry. Give the man a decent gun. Oh, but that's not the issue.
That's not what we're talking about. Yeah, of course Captain America used a gun. Captain America was a soldier during World War II. He's going to have used a gun. Now, did he indiscriminately just mow down whatever he saw? Probably not.
Yeah.
He wasn't going into German internment camps and just, mowing people down. It wasn't like Rambo. But he used a gun. He was a soldier. He used a gun. So that's what they depicted in the movie. And then there were news stories. And, of course, it hit the news cycle. Captain America uses a gun. Yeah.
And, that's interesting you bring up the news cycle as well, because we brought that up on previous issues of this arc. A little knowledge is a dangerous thing, and that's what often happens in the news cycle.
Exactly.
Somebody latches on to the wrong message and runs with it.
But that's the way it works. That's the way that everything is set up, is it's only going to work for 48 hours. You're only going to be able to get the juices out of a character, out of a story for 48 hours, and then, it goes on the shelf until you need it again.
And speaking of, especially the media coverage sort of, juicing while ripe, did we ever see anything on the very rare occasions where social disease entered comics? Was the media ever abuzz about that? I don't think, to my knowledge, it ever has been.
It was Flag, by the way. It was Flag Smasher was the character.
Okay. Not
leader of Ultimatum, which, by the way, Ultimatum stands for Underground Liberated Totally Integrated Mobile Army to Unite Mankind.
Somebody had to sit around for a long time to try to figure out how to, you thought it was hard to make for Ian Fleming to come up with some excuse for Spectre.
Wow.
This is the most ham-fisted anagram I've ever heard in my life.
And that's worse than S.H.I.E.L.D.
Anagrams fall very nicely into the segue into venereal disease.
Well, you were talking about Juicy, and I was waiting for it. I was like, oh, he's going to do it.
No less.
Come on. I was like, do it. Segue from the word Juicy into venereal disease. I want to hear that, Doug.
And if I wasn't going to give you that, you're, by God, going to have it anyway.
I'm going to work it. I'm going to make it. I'm going to back you into that corner.
That's right. We'll have to come up with an ultimatum for whatever that's called, or an ultimatum, an anagram for whatever that's called.
That's right.
So, yeah. While it doesn't seem that, probably because it very infrequently comes up, and usually in comics nobody's really aware of outside the comic shops.
Yeah.
You don't see anything about superheroes and venereal diseases. I don't even know if Shadowhawk contracting AIDS got any kind of real coverage. I mean, outside of the comic media.
That's the only one that I can remember actually hearing anything about. I remember hearing that, but I don't remember hearing it in a big way. I just remember, Shadowhawk, he's the character with AIDS.
Yeah, and it's one of those things. I know it made its way around the fan press, but I don't think it made its way around the mainstream press so much. It may well have, and I'm sure to some small degree it did, because there's always some idiot fringe waiting to pounce on anything that, they might think is perpetuating some kind of gay agenda or something.
Yeah, which I'm trying to remember how the story went that he contracted AIDS. I don't remember.
I'm not certain.
Was it ever said? It had to have been said.
It probably was, but I didn't really follow that in any way, shape, or form, so I really couldn't say it any kind of certainty. I almost want to say he got it from
That's what it was. That's what it was.
Did he get it from a vampire?
No, that would be great if he did. That never happens. He got it before he was Shadowhawk. What kind of led to his becoming of Shadowhawk was he got attacked by some quote unquote gangsters that injected him with HIV infected blood.
Okay, yeah. Something about that ring. I don't know where the vampires came in.
I don't know, but that doesn't... No, actually, I think there's a story that has never happened.
There was a vampire character in one of the comics at some point who got AIDS.
There should be... Somebody should have gave him the clap. Like, a vampire carrying the clap would be great. Not AIDS. I don't want to see AIDS. I want to see a vampire carrying just, like, something fairly benign. Nothing life-threatening.
Or unlife-threatening in his case, I
exactly.
guess.
Exactly. Herpes. Just give him the herp. Just bite him, give him the herp. That's what there's an outbreak of the herp in.
Probably because he's undead, there's no cure. You know, conventional medicine doesn't work on the undead.
That's true. That's true.
You know, he can't take any metoclopramide or anything for his clap. He's just going to have to live with it.
Well, one of these days we'll get into the fact that I feel that undeath is in itself a sexually transmitted disease.
Yeah, it's probably going to be a little more tenuous to promote here, but we can certainly cover that.
Yes.
We'll cover that on the undead and comment.
So, yes, Shadowhawk had AIDS. And that was I remember hearing about it. There wasn't much.
We'll go off the beaten path real quick and then jump back onto actual sexually transmitted diseases. But if you ever get a chance, and again, I'm going to just promote the hell out of this, the top 10, especially the first run of it, which Alan Moore wrote, because it had the best art team of any top 10 anything, and Alan Moore was the only one who understood how to write it. But one of the underlying backstories in that, one of the cases the police investigate is this guy's picked up for... trying to pick up a prostitute, and later on the character comes back as having contracted a sexually transmitted disease in this world where everybody has superpowers. So the sexually transmitted diseases is an anagram, STORMS, which I had to look this up because I would never have remembered how this went. Sexually transmitted organic rapid mutation syndrome. The horrifying way this particular disease was put forward is it's sexually transmitted, and what happens to the victim is always different.
So it manifests itself differently.
Yeah, it manifests itself in some sort of mutations, usually always terrible. You know, effectively, it's just there's some sort of hideous mutations that occur.
Like what? Do you have examples of any of them?
Well, they actually were showing when he's diagnosed, they're showing him pictures, and they actually show a shot of some of the pictures he was shown, and like the lower body of this, you see like the person's regular lower legs, and the top of their body is just a bunch of hideous jaws full of teeth sprouting out.
So we're not talking like go to the doctor and get some topical cream stuff here.
We're not talking like boils that you have to get a seat cushion for, but we're talking, some pretty hideous, you know, you turn into a squid or something.
Unfortunately, it's not all. What was the name of the thing? Powers?
Huh?
What was the name of the one from Top 10? Yeah, unfortunately, it's not all storms. We do have AIDS, like Shadowhawk had AIDS. AIDS also existed in a Teen Titans as well, in the form of Speedy, who was Green Arrow's sidekick after Roy Harper. We're talking about Mia, not Roy, though Roy has his own legacy that we'll get into a little later. You know, and it was a big secret that she couldn't tell, and there was a big debate as to whether she was going to join the Teen Titans or not, and there was a big secret about it, and then there was the big reveal, and then the conversation, and I think the important part about that in comic books was it wasn't an adult character. It was a teen character. Much like, you know, everybody else, Green Arrow takes in waifs and orphans from the street and makes them into his sidekicks. And this one happened to have AIDS, unfortunately. whether she should join the Titans, you know, the ramifications. There was a lot of times that she was on a cocktail of drugs that would make her essentially weak. She didn't ever have superpowers. She wasn't ever, you know, super strong or anything like that, but would take her out of the action because she was on a cocktail of AIDS drugs, essentially HIV drugs. What it meant to the rest, it's the old adage of, or the idea that if you have HIV or you have AIDS, that people don't necessarily want to be around you because they're scared not only of you, but they're scared for their own safety as well, because there's a misunderstanding or a misconception as to what it is and how you can get it, especially if you're running around with a quiver full of razor sharp arrows and a bow fighting crime. So that was that. I don't think there's ever been a real serious, super serious look at this in comic books. And it's one of those things that, if told correctly, we've talked about this in this story arc prior to this, if told correctly, it could make for a very poignant story and not just a headline grabber and I don't think anybody has done that yet. And if I'm wrong, if I've missed something, please let me know. But yeah, as absolutely. Of yet, I haven't seen anything.
Well, you don't ever see, you know, where it becomes a recurring part of the overall mythology of the character, where they're struggling, you know, maybe not every issue. We don't need to be reminded. It does need to be like the first 20-some-odd issues of the New Mutants, where every time he fired up, Cannonball had to remind you that he's pretty much invulnerable when he's blasting.
That's right.
We don't need a constant reminder of aspects of a character, but, you know, periodically they should come up.
Yeah. I don't even want to start talking about Cannonball's accent either. That was a crime in and of itself.
Yeah.
Hey, y'all.
Sort of the Deliverance character from Marvel Universe. He expected his power to be banjo playing.
Chaw spitting and jug blowing.
There's two things I do well. It's eat peanuts and chew tobacco. Because I'm from the Deep South.
How, how, hee, how, hee.
Salute.
But
yeah, I went there too.
Beyond that, I mean, you have Shadowhawk who got AIDS through an injection. That's not the only injection that exists in comic books.
Oh, there, well played.
Yeah, that was just, yeah, that's how you segue, ladies and gentlemen, yeah, into drugs. There's a lot of drug use in comic books. A lot of various illicit substance abuse. And substance abuse in general in comic books, stemming from, you know, if you're going to look at the timeline of this, you've got everything from Tony Stark and Demon in a Bottle, which was the first I can remember serious look at alcoholism in comics, regardless of, you know, whether people were lining up around the corner to get some of that ham for Christmas or not, because it was pretty ham-fisted. All the way up to some of the more ridiculous depictions. Are you from – do you remember the – what was the name of it? Black Ice, or maybe it was just Ice, the Captain America story arc where you find out that the Super Soldier Serum was a drug.
Oh, no, I wasn't aware of
that. Oh, it was awful. It was awful.
It's up there in awful with the origin of Cloak and Dagger, where, you know, this gangland attempt to make some new super street drug that was cheap to make and highly addictive inadvertently created the heroes who then made it their lifelong mission to stamp out the very people that created them. And I remember one, I think it was like in the Comic Buyer's Guide, somebody pointed out, it says, yeah, but we already have that. It's called crack, and it doesn't turn anybody into superheroes.
It's very true. It's very true.
The same, I guess, for the Super Soldier Serum.
Yeah, it's just, oh my God, it was awful. It was awful, and I wish I remember the name, but there were all these links to Captain America, like bloodshot eyes, crazy giant, like bloodshot eyes, and just awful. It was god awful. But yeah, and
bloodshot
and my
eyes,
personal
bloodshot
favorite,
fingernails.
I've got to get it. I've got to get, you know, like attacking. Oh, so
it was almost like reefer madness. I got to get me some reefers.
It was like that. It was honestly like that.
Okay, so comic. I was wondering when we went into this if comics ever had their own reefer madness, and I guess they did.
Did they really?
Well, you know, it was Super Soldier Serum Madness.
Super Soldier, yeah. I'm trying to remember because I know that Diamondback was a big part of the book, where Diamondback was a member of the Serpent Squad or the Serpent Society or whatever she was that turned good a little bit. She was sort of – they decided, hey, Captain America needs a Catwoman. Let's give him this.
Okay.
And she had the diamond earrings that she would throw.
Yeah.
She was, you know, trying to break him of the drug, you know, and he would end up like just in back alleys, just cracked out, like scruffy beard looking Captain America. Oh. It was great. It was great.
Was he ever mistaken for D-Man?
Dude, do we need to talk about homelessness in comic books?
I think D-Man may be D-Man and is probably the only shining example of that.
Yes, Streets of Poison was the name of the series.
I thought that was a movie with Willem Dafoe.
It might have been.
That was Streets of Fire.
Streets of Fire. Yeah. It was Streets of Poison.
I knew there was a character called Ellen Aim, but I didn't remember Captain America in that movie.
Yeah, and the book is, it's fantastic. If you can find it, it's called Ice. He at one point he beats the crap out of Daredevil. It's just It's so bizarre. It's like a David Lynch movie at some point. Mark Grunwald. It's one of those where he's accidentally, you know, like by accident, he gets exposed to this like art, you know, this aerosol version of this drug that bonds with his super soldier serum and makes him a crazy drug addict.
So it's like that Starsky and Hutch where the mob got one of the two hooked on drugs, and then the other one in Huggy Bear had to hole up in a hotel trying to detox him.
It's awful. It's
so
awful.
Like Nomad and Chalkin come and tie him down in his, you know.
It was exactly like that. Like, oh, you have so much to live. We got to break you of this. And he's got like crazy wild eyes. And oh man, it was awful. But by far the worst depiction of drug use in my mind that has ever come out was the original Roy Harper Speedy Red Arrow. Back in the original, you know, back before comic books got really crazy. Recently, let's call it the last 10 years.
Yeah.
He was addicted to heroin in the comic. That was a big deal during those days where they were trying to break him of the heroin addiction. And,
well, especially because that was post Comic Code Authority and it really skirted a fine line with what that organization was willing to do. And thankfully they went ahead and ran with it.
Exactly. Now, later, there was a comic book that came out called The Rise of Arsenal, okay? Rise of Arsenal has been noted as the worst comic book.
Wow.
Yeah, the worst comic book to come out in a long time. I think ever, basically. I'm going to try to tell you what happens, but it is so weird. Okay. The first thing that happens is he gets – his daughter dies, which is sad in any comic book, right? But it's because it's, you know, the daughter dying. That's awful. So he kind of goes crazy and goes and decides that he's going to go back on heroin.
Okay.
So he gets all high on heroin. And something called China Cat, which is just sounds awful. It sounds like a Starsky and Hutch truck, China Cat. Which,
like, Huggies, the mob hooked him on the China Cat. China so, Cat.
He's down in the basement hitting that China Cat. That's so funny. His daughter is killed by Prometheus, who is a character in the DC universe that was introduced during the James Robinson Justice League run that has the ability to kind of matrix the powers of anybody that he can get, you know, a read on and put on these little discs and put in his helmet. So he took out everybody in the Justice League with the exception of Roy Harper, whom nobody sees Roy Harper coming because nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
So why he wears red.
That's why he was red. So he takes out Prometheus, and Prometheus has been trying to get revenge ever since. Finally, Prometheus is successful in killing his daughter. So he goes crazy, goes back on the drugs, and there is a panel of the comic book where he is hallucinating because of the China Cat, and he's in an alleyway. And what you see in the panel is he's holding his daughter who's still alive, and he's fighting and essentially killing just this mass of multiple Prometheus coming at him. Yeah, if you will. And then we cut to the next scene, which is outside of his hallucination, where he's in this alley holding a dead cat and killing homeless guys.
Oh, wow.
And this is all depicted in the comic book. It's awful.
It's just that bad.
It is really just that bad. I don't even know what to say. It was so awful. But at least with the original run, the original portion of Roy Harper's life, when he was actually addicted to heroin, they did a really good job of exploring what that means. Not so much, you know, later, where he's in an alley with a cybernetic arm killing homeless dudes. But prior to that, when they really had an intervention, explained that he needed to clean up his act and he needed to kick the drugs and, you know, the whole, you know, comic book heavy hand and even fist kind of scenario, that was good. That was good. This is not so good. This is kind of bad. Here's the thing about drugs in comics is it's kind of become almost passé. It's almost become something that isn't even worth mentioning in a serious fashion because, you know, in one way or another, so many characters are addicted to something or another in comic books that it's almost a cliche in and of itself to put a drug addicted character in a comic book.
Yeah.
So,
and that's probably by and large why it seems to have disappeared almost, or it's just not as prevalent a hot button issue as it might once have been.
But yeah,
there was a couple of issues story arc in the Teen Titans during the Wolfman Perez years that was a, you know, speaking on drugs, this one crossed my mind because it was about runaways being recruited by the mob to run drugs.
Okay.
And the Teen Titans sort of being able to intervene and everything. But as I recall, a very powerful storyline, but it was so just gritty, real world, and it skirted a fine edge of the Comics Code Authority, which I guess at that point was trying to reassert its authority, as it were.
Yeah.
Again, and, you know, try to mean something again. Because DC actually was very close. They were so committed to that story, they were going to run those issues with or without the Comics Code seal.
Really?
Yeah.
We should do a show on the Comics Code.
We actually should. And in fact, we should do a show about not only the Comics Code, but about just the whole, you know, at what point is censorship too much?
Yes.
In comics. Because there's a lot we can touch on there. But yeah, I remember reading about that they came very close to running those without the Comic Code seal and did finally get the okay.
There are a lot of instances where I think that the Comics Code works like censors. Like, yeah. If you're writing a sitcom or something, you put it in, you try to slide some stuff past the censors, which, you know, Alan Moore does that better than anybody. But if you try, you know, you write it and then it comes back and like, damn it, they caught us. Yeah. All right, we'll rewrite it. And you'd have to figure out how you actually want to say it.
You have to find some way to smuggle what you want past the censors. And, you know, speaking of like on the Teen Titans and the kid runaways, then you also just sort of the issue of teen pregnancy is one that I don't think it almost never comes up.
No.
And the one thing, you know, a lot of people probably don't even realize this ever happened. There was an imprint that was published by DC called Milestone Comics. And
yeah.
Really, for me, you know, some of the early stuff was good. Some of it was okay. You know, Blood Syndicate was just like, meh. Because it was just trying too hard to be like the Urban Justice League. And, you know, in so many ways, unfortunately, a lot of the characters were just sort of like an urban, gritty version of things that had come before. Or it was easy enough to make that corollary.
Yeah.
But the only one that I felt was really well written from the outset was Icon. Because on the surface, it looked like, oh, look, another Superman character. In a time when Superman characters were appearing ad nauseum, especially at the Independents. And what it did well was sort of blend the sensibilities of Superman with those of Batman. Because you had a Superman who had a sidekick. A sidekick he reluctantly took on, but eventually, you know, came to embrace. And his sidekick was known as Rocket. In fact, I think after a while it just became known as Icon and Rocket as far as the comic itself.
Now, side note, Rocket is actually in, Icon and Rocket are both in Young Justice, the cartoon that's on TV. Okay, you know, continue.
There was another book in the Milestone imprint, Static, which later became Static Shock,
mm-hmm.
and was the first one to successfully make the jump outside of the Milestone imprint and
Correct.
Become something bigger. And that was actually one of the only other ones that was really kind of cleverly done and well written. But basically, you have the character, her real name, in the character's real name was Raquel Irvin, becomes pregnant. She finds out she's pregnant. And there, I was actually reading the book at this point in the series, and it was one of the best. One of the things I love is when a single panel or a couple of panels, or you know, in very short order, you can convey so much implicitly without having to do, you know, 10 pages to get your point across. And she goes to confront her ex-boyfriend about her pregnancy, and his response is, "How do you know it's mine?" And her reply to that is just to slug the living daylights out of him. And he's there lying on the ground in pain and asks her, "What was that for?" And as she's storming off, she says, "How do you know it's mine?" And I thought, you know, that was a brilliant way to say volumes.
Yeah.
In very short order, 3 or 4 panels, you're in, you're out. You have conveyed what you're trying to say there.
Yeah.
And ironically, you know, the concept of teen pregnancy sort of snuck in under the radar. It didn't become this big news media thing. And I think that if it happened, if, like, you know, the new Wonder Girl got pregnant, it would the press releases would be flying.
Yeah, if Robin got pregnant.
Yeah, like, especially if it's Joker's baby.
I got you now, Batman.
That's right.
I impregnated the boy wonder. What? And
How did? Does that even work?
Is that even a thing? I'm not even mad. I mean,
you're both human. I mean, if you were like from some dimension or something, if you're Batmite, I'd
After the bat mite. I'm not even upset. I'm just impressed. How do you do that? Man,
I guess I did
not give you enough credit, Joker.
Family,
I did not give you enough credit.
You know, I guess we have to have you over for Thanksgiving now.
That's right. Now you're family.
It's the Joker again, Mr. Wayne.
He's brought another... Yeah. Brought another onesie. We've got enough onesies. This show took a weird turn.
Yes, it did. I had no idea when we started we'd go to that.
We ended up with Robin getting pregnant and Joker being the stepfather to Batman.
I'm not really sure what the relationship there is at that point. Let's get a little more real world for a minute and talk real quick about when the real world issues, and I'm talking not just, you know, issues that occur in the real world, but real world issues that touch everybody's life creep into the comics just long enough to say, okay, we've covered that. And often like they do it as just sort of a little sidebar special. Get
one
it out
issue,
of the way.
One shot specials.
Yeah. And of course, back in the 80s, the big hot button thing with the whole We Are the World, and you had a lot of different concerts and things going on for famine relief. So naturally, both Marvel and DC decided we've got to jump on this bandwagon. And they did. Kind of benefit issue one-shot
yes.
comics. If I'm not mistaken, the Marvel was Heroes for Hope and DC was Heroes Against Hunger. And I may have reversed those. And I don't mean that it was Heroes Against Hope and Heroes for Hunger. I mean that.
No, it was Marvel's was Heroes for Hope.
Okay, I did get that right.
You got that right. It starred the X-Men.
Yes. Yes, it did. Back when Magneto was leading them in that ridiculous Laverne and Shirley monogrammed outfit he had.
Yes.
With the giant M.
And that weird Phoenix Debbie Harry Jean Grey thing.
Oh,
and the Shadow Cat's awful costume. And Wolverine had Wolverine's hair and Rogue had Wolverine's hair.
That's right. And so they go to They go to Ethiopia or something and briefly pay tribute or, you know, give their condolences to the plight of famine-racked countries and then leave.
Then abruptly leave.
Yeah. And then the same was with Heroes Against Hunger. You have Superman and Batman, I believe. Definitely Superman. And Lex Luthor is mocking him because for all his power, he can't help the hungry.
Yeah.
And I guess after that, it's almost like the graphic novel 30-something years ago, The Death of Captain Marvel, where in the course of that, all the big brain superheroes get together in one fell swoop, try to cure cancer.
Yeah.
And then Captain Marvel, who isn't even human, I might add, dies of cancer. And then we never speak of trying to find a cancer cure again.
Yeah, no,
it's like,
done.
You know, if one of our own is dying, we're going to jump on this. Oh, he's dead. Okay, well, there's no cure for cancer.
By the way, the Heroes for Hope comic was in 85. There was one issue.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear some of the people that were involved in the creation of this book?
I know, if I'm not mistaken, Barry Windsor-Smith did some art for that, did he not?
Well, let me just give you a little bit of a rundown. Chris Claremont, which isn't unexpected because it is a X-Men book. Stan Lee wrote some. Mike Grell wrote some. Archie Goodwin wrote some. Harlan Ellison wrote one. George R.R. Martin. Alan Moore. Yeah. Jim Starlin. Bernie Wrightson was involved. Dennis O'Neill was involved. Pencilers included Barry Wrightson was involved in the penciling, but John Romita Jr., Frank Miller, Howard Chaykin, John Byrne was involved. It's just like the list goes on. Bill Steinswick was involved as an inker. Sal Buscema was involved. The list is ridiculous.
I wonder if they were trying to invoke, and almost certainly were trying to invoke, a We Are the World kind of ensemble.
Stephen King. Yeah, I'm sure.
That's right. Stephen King did write a segment in that because there was a thing where, like, this the specter of death comes and is mocking them, and he's saying, good food, good meat, good God, let's eat.
That
is a very King
cover.
Way to...
Yeah, it is. Speaking of, never leave your TV on when you're upstairs and you're scared of clowns, as a side note. Because last night it was on. The lights are everything. I'm up here cutting. I was finishing cutting one of the Hey Kids Comics podcasts, and I went downstairs to grab something to drink. And the lights are out in the entirety of the living room and the kitchen and everywhere. And the only light is coming from behind me up the stairs. And I turned the corner, and there on the the TV is Tim Curry dressed as a clown standing in a sewer holding a friggin' balloon. And I'm like, nope, no, no.
Why couldn't it be a commercial for Lysol? Why do you mock me, Pennywise?
Nope. I was like, that's it. I'm done. I'm going to bed. I'm out. But yeah. And they did they not do something like this for 9/11 as well?
Yes, they did. There were several 9/11 specials on both sides of the big two. And again, it was just sort of like, okay, here we've covered it and we'll speak of it no more because it doesn't really need to be in our universe. And in a sense, you know, I can appreciate that because, you know, in comics, you're going to have a certain degree of we've built a lot of structure of where we're headed months before it's going to come out.
Yes.
And it would be very difficult to go and just pry bar too much real world in there.
Without it coming out as super pandering.
Yes. And then, you know, once you get caught up to the point where you could start incorporating that, then does it seem pandering because it's so late?
Marvel does a really great thing now where if it's something like the Komen Cancer Foundation or the 9/11 happened, they release covers to books that, you know, so they don't change the book itself. The story is still the same story that it was when it was supposed to be released 7 or 8 months ago. But the covers reflect whatever is happening in the real world.
Okay, that's...
So you get like the, when 9/11 happened, they had covers of like real heroes, police officers and firemen.
Yes, I remember when that was going on.
Yeah, and that was, and they were all had kind of the Captain America motif going, but as the real Captain Americas. So Marvel does a really good thing with that too. But Marvel's also the ones that just sometimes don't print anything on their covers so you can take them to conventions and have other people draw their work for them. So I don't know which one is the lesser of the evils.
Well, and you know, the thing about that is, and I'll just touch on this briefly, is you go to any artist alley at any convention and you're nobody if you don't have a stack of issues of any given book sitting there with your illustrations on them.
Nowadays, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, it's been a boon for Marvel. It's a great selling tool because every artist from the finest undiscovered to the just absolute hack have a stack of these things that they'll scribble their shit on there for you.
Yeah, I'll do it. Bring it to me.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be almost worth my table price to just sit there and see if I could pull that off myself.
The only other one I really wanted to touch on was, and it was a weird one, and it was, if you listen to the United States of Geekdom, we talked about it a little bit during the collector sector, and it was one of those where it got the 2 days media blitz and then it was gone. And I'm still not sure why it was written, unless it was strictly for the 2 days of media blitz and then it was gone, was the Superman renouncing his American citizenship.
Oh, yes.
As written by J. Michael Straczynski, if I remember correctly.
Sounds right. But
because,
I can't.
Stanley in his jetpack and he pees on him. We discussed that at length. I just, I don't know why. I'm still trying to figure that out. I don't understand why you would do that. And it was very bizarre and really weird. And it served no, I never saw the purpose as to why they did that. I mean, can you think of a reason?
I don't know if, you know, Straczynski's a tough nut to crack anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
And I don't know if it, you know, was his angle. Here you have this character who isn't actually even from here. You know, he's not an earthling.
No, he's not.
And he has become sort of this epitome of truth, justice, and the American way. He's become this symbol of America because that's where he happened to crash land. And, you know, does he reach a point in his life, in his career, where he's, you know, he doesn't really want to be a tool anymore? Or was this Straczynski trying to pry bar his, you know, some of the sensibilities of his Squadron Supreme Marvel Max series into this, which, if you haven't read that, at least the early issues, by and large, are the best Justice League story ever told, because
yeah,
the Squadron Supreme was just a big stinking Justice League ripoff anyway. And we'll cover that in a future issue, I assure you.
Yes.
But if you read it, by and large, and you look at all the characters as the Justice League, with the exception of a very, you know, fits and starts trying to get the Wonder Woman character in there, the Hyperion aspects, which is your Superman character, We're like, wow, if you just excised that part and extrapolated it further, it would be the best Superman story ever told without Superman in it.
Without Superman actually being in them.
So, yeah, I'm really not sure where to go with that. I mean, it would be easy to point to issues where a lot of people who can have sort of dodged their citizenship, usually for financial reasons. Superman doesn't head a major multinational, so he really isn't looking for a tax dodge.
Yeah. I mean, the whole idea is that he wasn't agreeing with things that were happening. The speech from the actual comic book was, I intend to speak before the United Nations tomorrow and inform him that I'm renouncing my U.S. citizenship. I'm tired of having my actions construed as instruments of U.S. policy, truth, justice, and the American way. It's not enough anymore. The world's too small, too connected. So
I guess it's more of him trying to become a global citizen than anything at the heart of it.
Yes. And a lot of people viewed that as DC's renunciation of American policy and foreign policy and blah, 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 blah.
Of course.
And I personally view it as
a cash grab.
As a cash grab.
And at the end of the day, that's what a lot of these things are when we're – and we'll definitely be
when
covering
when you boil them down.
In
they're
a later
a cash
story
grab.
Arc where we cover many.
Speaking
aspects.
Of that is a great segue, guys. I'm gonna go ahead and wrap it up. Thank you for joining us on our first full story arc. Cole, did you have anything you wanted to add to this one?
The only other thing I would say is, in going back to top 10, oddly enough, it touches on two great social issues in a very superhero-y way, and that was the investigation of a very Justice League modeled team that sort of winds up being investigated by these super cops.
Yeah.
And uncovers that they have a child pornography ring utilizing all of their sidekicks. And that was another way where Alan Moore brilliantly, you know, jumps in the hairy middle of very touchy issues and gets away with it.
Yeah, he does that.
And also, I guess, you know, something else that occurred to me really quickly is go back and look for the early issues of Howard the Duck.
Oh, yeah.
Because nobody jumped in the hairy middle of social issues like Howard the Duck. And a lot of people are like, Howard the Duck, the hell? It's like, but he's not Marvel's Daffy Duck. The original Howard the Duck was actually utilizing a non-human character to be the outsider and point a big finger at big social issues, like the upselling of machismo in one issue, like cultism in another. And there were just so many things, and it takes a goofy, funny kind of look, but as you read them, you can't help but notice we're peeling away some the veneer of America and looking at things that we all know are going on but we don't like to talk about. And you can listen to a duck tell you these things far easier than you can listen to Captain America or Superman tell you these things.
Exactly. It's sort of an anthropomorphized cipher.
Exactly.
All the things that are happening in the world, you're reading it, and all of a sudden, you're right, it dawns on you that, wait a second, this isn't goofy Howard the Duck with his big-breasted girlfriend in a goofy comic book. This is some real stuff that I've just read and didn't realize I was reading it because I thought I was reading a comic book about a duck and his giant-breasted girlfriend.
That's right. Now, I will warn you that it does have a little bit of social commentary, but they did have a little fun late in the series in 1977 when they did their two-part Star Wah. But other than that, a lot of it is pretty meaty social stuff.
There you go.
And I think with that, we have really covered a lot of social issue ground here.
We definitely pinballed around a little bit, but I think we got a good. I think we did a good job of covering a lot.
And I do want to point out to our listeners that this issue and its predecessor were both ones that were part of the story arc fairly early into the game as it was being developed. But these were the two that we went into, especially Andrew, with some trepidation about, is there enough there? And then, you know, we're sort of having to rush to wrap things up because there's more than enough there. And that's one of the things I've really enjoyed about this series so far, is you get talking, and I think those of you who are really into comics or really into anything, and you, if you sit down and think about some of the conversations you've had with your friends, and you think, you know, on the surface, what we started talking about, you could write on one page.
Yeah.
But you get talking about it, and the transcripts would look like some sort of congressional hearing transcripts, because there's so much more there once you get that ball rolling.
Yeah.
And if there's one thing we've learned from this first story arc, is once that ball gets rolling, it's hard to slow it down.
It's the boulder from Indiana Jones at that point.
You just your have to keep running until you get to the cave entrance and Belloc's exactly. waiting for you. With the Ovitos.
Throw me the whip and I'll throw you the idol.
That's right.
At the end.
I think also, if we've learned anything from this series, Andy and I are constantly tossing whips and idols back and forth.
That's right. It's all this is if you really want an analogy for what we're right. doing, we're just tossing whips and idols.
It took us 5 issues to figure it out, but there it is.
We know what we're doing now. Cole had a good segue earlier about the marketing and the monetizing of comic books, and that's what the next story arc is going to be about. Cole, what are we titling this next story arc?
The next story arc is Comics, Commerce, and the Almighty Buck.
There you go. If you've ever listened to any of Cole and I's other podcasts, this is something that comes up fairly frequently. Cash grabs, the business end of things. World had it talking about a little bit of this, but I'm looking forward to really being able to get into it in 5 separate instances and really look at how it all works. And we have the added bonus of Cole actually having worked in the business end of the business.
That's right. I've worked in various aspects of the comic industry myself. And if you're listening to this thing, okay, we're just going to go, you know, boom, 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 arc, arc, arc. We're not building trade paperbacks here by any means.
No.
And Andrew had a really good idea in developing his show, and that is we're going to have kind of some palate cleansers, if you will, where we're going to try to do some arcs, but in between them, we'll have an issue or two where we just either have a little fun or we go off on a one-shot or a special type of thing. So I think we already have our next issue lined up where we're going to have a little fun with things.
The next issue we're going to do is Cole and I, aside from being avid comic fans and collectors, Cole probably more so than I, but definitely I, are avid toy collectors and collectible collectors. Cole has his wheelhouse, which is Star Wars, and I have mine, which is Green Lantern. There have been some really, really awful toys and collectibles released throughout the years. Just horrible, bad toys. The next issue, which is going to be issue 6, we are going to be delving into those just pieces of plastic crap that you spent your money on when you were 14 or 13 or talked somebody into buying for you that you can look back now and say, good God, what was I thinking? Yeah.
So yeah, we're going to talk about the hall of shame of comic book toys.
And there's a lot of shame.
There is.
There's a lot of shame. We're going to be, you know, bad toy shaming in this next episode. Guys, thank you for sticking with us through the first story arc. It's sort of gone from what was an experiment for Cole and I to something we really enjoy doing and absolutely love. If you guys have any suggestions, you guys can get to us at Facebook page for Hey Kids Comics, which is HK Comics Show. Same with the Twitter feed, HK Comics Show. Cole, why don't you tell them a little bit about the Jedi Cole universe?
Absolutely. Of course, if you're listening to this, ideally you've discovered us on the Jedi Cole Universe site, which is the home of many fun features and an ever-growing, bewildering array of podcasts, many of which will be much more regular than others have been. So far, this thing being the most regular. And also a lot of feature articles. As Andrew mentioned, Star Wars being my wheelhouse, I do a series called Jedi Justifications, where I try to make some sense of things that seem a little out of place in the Star Wars universe. We have occasionally another recurring feature, Odd eBay, where God knows I spend a lot of time on eBay. So I often stumble upon things that just have to be shared with the general public.
Yes.
And we're inviting a lot more. We have a couple of podcasts that are actually in development right now. We're very early pre-production stages, but I'm very excited to announce we've got some more podcasts in the works. And there's just always, you never know what's going to fall out of my ever-ticking brain and wind up on the page.
You never do.
And, of course, as I mentioned earlier, we have the brand new Jedi Cole Universe forums. Please join. It's free. It's quick and easy to join up and get in there and let's get some discussions going. And chances are Andrew and I will actually be piping in on discussions that people start on the forums because we love this sort of thing.
Of course. What else do we have to do as Z-list celebrities? Well, right. No, I'm sorry, Cole. You're up to an S-list celebrity.
I'm actually clawing my way up to a Y-list celebrity, so I should point out.
You bypassed Y. I think you're probably up to somewhere in the RS range.
Okay. I figured I was no higher than U, but...
No, I think I might have actually broken the U range.
Wow. Good for
yeah,
you.
I think I climbed up from Z and I made it to you, but I'm not near
not where
the status.
So I will point out that we'll have some more details on this on the website very soon, but the Galaxy Rangers Fan Days in Abilene, Texas.
Yes.
Coming up in late September, last weekend of September. I am officially a guest of Galaxy Ranger Fan Days. I will be presenting my presentation, Confessions of a Z-List Celebrity, and she jogged that memory out of me, or taking fandom by the horns. And our good Miss Perkala and I will be putting on a presentation about being a real-life superhero. A little presentation for the kids! As Mr.
Presentation for the kids!
For the kids! So
this is
be sure, if you can, to come out to Abilene and see me and Aaron Gray from TV's Battlestar Galactica, from Buck Rogers Star Galactica, and also from Battlestar Galactica, the original Sheba, whose name suddenly escapes me, so... And Lockhart.
Yes.
Apologies to Anne Lockhart, who was goodly enough to be in one of my game shows at Alcon years ago. So I'll be in very good company. So you'll have some real celebrities there to come out and see and get autographs from. And then you can come out and hear me talk. And I'll also be happy to autograph any editions of the Star Wars Super Collector's Wish book in which my articles appear.
Because you're awesome. With that being said, okay, everybody, stay tuned. We got some fun, a couple episodes coming up. And then we're going to get back into something a little more serious. As always, we're going to wrap the show like this. Everybody out there, just remember to read, buy, and most importantly, enjoy comic books. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. To be continued, fearless listeners, stay tuned. It only gets better from here.